Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Oklahoma Center for the Humanities is presenting a two-night program exploring food and cocktails this coming Monday and Tuesday. Today on Studio Tulsa, we focus on the food part of that event with author Alex Prudhomme, the co-author of Julia Child's memoir, My Life in France, and the author of a new biography of Child that picks up where the memoir left off. The French Chef in America, Julia Child's second act, begins with the publication of Mastering the Art of French Cooking, the best-selling book that launched her television career. The book documents Child's insatiable curiosity about food and her easy manner in conveying that to television viewers, as well as the hard work involved in both television and writing cookbooks and crafting recipes and learning about cuisines from around the world. Alex Prudhomme had entree into the Child's world as a grandnephew, but he's also a talented writer and journalist in his own right, whose work has appeared in the New York Times and The New Yorker, and he's the author of books on subjects as disparate as hydrofracking, water scarcity in the 21st century, and cancer research. The new book is titled The French Chef in America, Julia Child's Second Act. He'll appear in Tulsa Monday evening, courtesy of the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities and BookSmart Tulsa. The event gets underway at 7 o'clock at Chapman Hall, Lecture Hall on the TU campus, and a book signing and film screening will follow. Alex Prudhomme joins me by phone today on Studio Tulsa. Alex Prudhomme, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
One of the things that's really interesting about you is you write about a whole variety of subjects, but one subject you have returned to is the story of your famous, Julia Child, who collaborated with her memoir, My Life in France, and now this biography, The French Chef in America, which you call her second act. How does her life after publishing the Mastering the Art of French Cooking define her second act?
Well, the first act, so-called, is describes the years that Julia and Paul Child lived in France. Well, it was 1948 through 1954, and I helped Julia write about those years in her memoir, My Life in France. And that book sort of ends when they return to the States in 1961 and settle in Cambridge, Massachusetts, right next to Boston. The second act picks up sort of mid-60s and goes through the early 80s. Which is a period when Julia completely changed her career, and it's a time that people aren't really aware of. She got away from the French chef persona and cooking just classical French cuisine. She reinvented herself and began to use recipes from around the world, got in touch with her American roots, and began to perform as Julia Child. And along the way, she developed this wonderful first-person voice. And I noticed a pattern, which is that she would confront an obstacle, and whether it was personal or professional, and then she would sort of figure out a way around it and move ahead, and often to greater success than ever. So it's a really interesting and inspiring sort of second act. She did this self-reinvention when she was in her 60s, a time when many people are thinking of retirement, and, in fact, achieved her greatest celebrity along the way.
Right. And this is when she really, you're talking about when she moves beyond classical French cuisine and all of a sudden becomes sort of a guide to cuisines of everywhere.
That's right. And it happened to coincide with this food revolution that was happening in America, which began in the 60s. And she wasn't solely responsible for that, of course, but she was probably its most eloquent and charismatic voice, and really kind of catalyzed the conversation around food, got people to think about food in a new way, got chefs to try new things, encouraged those of us at home who like to cook to eat more and pay attention to ingredients and technique and so on. So she was a very important figure.
Well, and you mentioned in the beginning of the book when you sort of detail the beginning of the French Chef, the public television show, that it wasn't the first cooking show, but it was by far the most influential and really influential on what would become now, you know, a plethora of cooking shows. She created the model of what a cooking show should look like in the United States.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, some people think that Julia was the first cook on television, and that wasn't the case at all. There were people cooking on TV beginning in the 40s, In fact, James Beard had a show called I Love to Eat, which was aptly titled, in 1946 on NBC. And there were little shows all across the country. There was one called Pots, Pans, and Personalities. There was the Italian chef Pino Bontempi, who would argue with his wife, sing opera, and produce a plate of spaghetti. There was a blind Mexican chef named Elena Zelieta, which is kind of extraordinary. And at that point, in the 40s and 50s, Julia and Paul were living abroad as diplomats and didn't even own a television. And I think they'd seen TV maybe once or twice. But Julia was intrigued, and it was in 1962 that she first got on television. They had retired from the diplomatic service and settled in Cambridge, Massachusetts in 61, the same year that her book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, was published. And in 62, she got on a local PBS station, WGBH in Boston, and did a little book show. And Julia being Julia, she didn't just bring her book. She also brought a hot plate and a frying pan and some eggs and, of course, lots of butter, and made an omelet, and was so intent on the omelet that she forgot to mention the title of her book. But the good news is that all 27 people who saw it wrote in and said, we want more of that tall lady cooking. So she was off to the races in 63. The French Chef began. And it was a moment when television as a medium was really exploding. And I found that fascinating that you know, she was the right messenger with the right message at the right time. And she just happened to be very good at television, which was not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, she seemed to have, you know, she always had this very, like, we have all the time in the world, even though, you know, when you're doing a cooking show, it's incredibly precise on the timing, and everything has to be condensed, and yet she was able to sort of create this carefree air. In fact, you know, that was, I mean, when you remember great moments in Julia Child, it's the mistakes, and her sort of just blowing it off and continuing.
Yeah, well, I think people found that very comforting that, well, if Julia makes mistakes on national TV, well, then I can make a mistake too, and it's not the end of the world. And that was really empowering to a lot of people. And, you know, let's remember what the food landscape looked like in those days. And this was the post-World War II years, post-Korea. Americans were newly wealthy, but we were still kind of awkward. We were discovering food, but many people were, you know, serving wedges of iceberg and, you know, jello molds and things like that. And it was, or, you know, food in a can. It's all quick. And Julia was advocating the opposite, a kind of handmade food that was somewhat elaborate and really tasty, but required perhaps ingredients or even tools that you didn't always possess. And she encouraged people and said, well, look, you know, boeuf bourguignon, it sounds fancy, but it's just beef stew, and anybody can do this. And I think that was a hugely empowering message.
And you also mentioned the things that she did differently from those other TV chefs before her time. One was actually tucking into the food after she created it. But it was also this sort of sensory experience of trying to convey the smells, the look, you know, actually looking down into the bowl. And these sorts of things that we sort of take for granted on a cooking show, a lot of those things came from her.
Yeah. She was really a revolutionary, and you're absolutely right. She was a very sensual and sensory person. And so she was constantly tasting her food on the show and correcting the seasoning. And even though you couldn't actually taste it, you felt as if you could as a watcher, you know. And you're right, when she pointed the camera down into the softly bubbling, you know, coq au vin, you just wanted to dive right through the TV and have a bite because it looked so good. And she was obviously genuinely enjoying herself. And she made it fun. She made it delicious. And she just brought a sense of adventure to a food program that had traditionally been kind of clinical. And you made a good point about how she presented the food at the end of the show. This is something we don't really think about today, but it used to be that a chef would cook something and then hold it up to the camera and say, ta-da! And Julia thought that didn't really complete the meal, you know, the journey of the meal from conception to cooking to consumption. So she would actually bring a big steaming pot of, say, ratatouille into the dining room set and sit down, and there were actual candles and real silverware and nice plates, and she would tuck into that food, and she would just, you know, groan with pleasure. And people had never seen this before. It was really remarkable.
Now, at the beginning of our conversation, you referred to Julia and Paul. Mm. And this is one of the, when you begin investigating Julia Child, they really were an incredible team together. And while Julia Child was the star, Paul was an equal partner in probably a lot of her success, and especially in the television program as far as keeping things fresh and an exploration of new cuisines and things like that.
Absolutely. Paul was crucial to Julia's success. And in fact, when we wrote her memoir together, we dedicated it to Paul because she always said, were it not for Paul, I wouldn't have had my career. And I think that's accurate. I mean, he's the one who brought her to France, encouraged her to get into cooking, took her to restaurants all over the place, really educated her palate, pushed her to do better. When she first got on television, she was a little awkward, and he coached her. And the thing that's remarkable about their relationship is they did call themselves a team. They were like two sides of a coin. You know, they would write letters together and sign them Puglia, as if they were sort of one brain working together. He described himself as the part of the iceberg beneath the water that the audience doesn't see. Julia was the part sticking up that was bright and shiny and white, and he was the part beneath that kind of made it all happen. And they were really an amazing team, and he was first half of their relationship. He was the senior partner. He was a diplomat. He was in public a lot. And she was behind the scenes as the dutiful diplomatic wife who didn't really have much of a role except to be a hostess and so on. But she was working very hard with her French friends, Simca Beck and Louisette Bertol, learning to cook, teaching cooking, and then ultimately writing Mastering the Art of French Cooking. So it was interesting. And then when they came back to the States in 61, Paul stepped back behind the scenes and pushed Julia forward. And it was sort of her turn. And they kind of reversed roles in a way.
That is one of the most amazing things about their marriage, was that they both had the foresight and understanding of each other, and certainly in Paul's case, the humility to see that Julia's to be a star and to be content in that.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, even today it would be remarkable for a man to do that in a marriage,
right.
But back then it was, you know, practically unheard of, and you know, they were both very open-minded, and they didn't have kids. That's one thing that's also important. I tried to get her to talk about that, and she wouldn't really go there with me, but they had tried, and as she said, it didn't take. And I said, well, did you ever think about in vitro? Nope. How about adoption? Nope. Wouldn't talk about it. But she did say to me later, you know, if we'd had children, I probably wouldn't have had my career. I would have devoted myself to the kids. So, you know, there was a self-recognizance there. She understood the choices and the circumstances, and she made the best of them. And in a way, I think of her books and shows and performances as her children. And then I was very lucky. My sisters and my cousins and I were kind of almost surrogate grandchildren, and she was very generous with us. We never really had cooking classes per se with her, but we learned by osmosis. I mean, she was always at the stove tinkering with something, and she was kind of a warm, friendly giant in a way, towering over us kids, but very encouraging and gentle and funny. And so you just learned by standing next to her and you know, eating her delicious food.
My guest today is Alex Prudhomme, a writer and author of four other books, including co-authoring a Julia Child's memoir, My Life in France, and books on everything from water policy in the 21st century to fracking and cancer research. But his latest book is The French Chef in America, Julia Child's Second Act. It's published by Knopf, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, Paul Child was an important collaborator with Julia Child. The other important, well, other two important collaborators in at least the first part of this second half of her life was her French co-author of Mastering the Art of French Cooking in Volume 2, Simca Beck, and her editor, Judith Jones. How did these two women shape the woman we know as Julia Child from television cooking?
Well, Simca was a classical French woman, whereas Julia was very American. They were sort of, they called each other sisters. They loved each other very much, but they also tended to fight like blood relatives sometimes do. They had many similarities. They were both born to upper middle class households with cooks. They both married suave older men. Neither of them had children. They both drove like outlaws and held strong opinions. And they worked very well together. Julia liked to be sort of precise in her measurements, and she liked to explain the hows and whys of a recipe. Simca was much more of an intuitive cook. She had a wonderful sense of taste and taste memory. But she would measure with a splash of this and a dash of that, whereas Julia was concerned about a quarter of a teaspoon and an eighth of a teaspoon, being very precise and kind of American about it. So that difference was, there was a sort of a creative tension there that was very helpful to them. They kind of drove each other on. They called each other the les vaches engrangées, the mad cows. They would get in the kitchen and just cook for hours and hours, and it was as if the rest of the world just faded away from them. But ultimately, the tension between them got to a point where they had a professional parting of the ways in 1971, and that's part of the story I tell in this new book, which had the effect, in a sense, freeing Julia from what she thought of as the straitjacket of classical French cuisine. And as you mentioned, the second person that was very important was Judith Jones, who was Julia's editor at Knopf. It turned out that Judith had lived in Paris at about the same time that Julia did and had learned to cook and had come back to the States, was working at Knopf, and was looking for a cookbook that would recreate some of those wonderful dishes that she'd had in France and couldn't find one. And through a mutual friend, Avis Devoto, this giant manuscript by three unknown ladies landed on her desk, and she began to cook from it, and lo and behold, it was a revelation. And so she championed that book and published it in 1961, and indeed was Julia's editor throughout her career. And actually, I had the opportunity to work with Judith on the memoir, My Life in France, which was sort of like working with Maxwell Perkins. She's just a legendary editor and a wonderful person. And she didn't have much editorial input on the first book because it landed on her desk as a fait accompli. But as I tell about in this new book of mine, volume two of Mastering the Art, Judith really was important. By then, Loisette Bertol, the third member of the brigade in the first book, had dropped away. She had a family and so on. And it was Simca and Julia, and the hidden sort of third person there was Judith Jones, who pushed them to try ambitious new recipes like how to make a baguette in your American home kitchen, or how to make a Napoleon, or things that sounded complicated. And Julia loved the challenge of trying to engineer a bread baking oven at your home kitchen. And she and Paul spent hours working on the bread recipe and coming up with a system for creating a puff of steam and things like that. And it's a fun story. And Judith also, later in the 70s, once Julia and Simca had split up, Judith pushed Julia to develop this first-person voice that finally flourished in the mid-70s. The problem was that Julia is a wonderful natural performer, but she was actually a very modest person, and she didn't like to talk about herself. And so at first, she resisted this notion of a first-person voice. She felt it was tooting her own horn too much. But Judith said, look, you need to separate yourself from your past as the French chef and working with Simca, and you need to translate that wonderful voice you've developed on television to the page. And she slowly, wore Julia down and won her over. And so she develops this first-person voice that finds its fruition in a book called From Julia Child's Kitchen, which came out in 1975, and it was her most personal book until we did the memoir. She told me it was the most difficult book she ever wrote, in part because of her struggles with writing at the first person, but also in part because of something that she didn't really talk about in public at the time, which was that Paul, in 1974, had had a heart bypass operation that didn't go well. And the oxygen was starved to his brain, and he ended up with what he called the mental scrambles. Lost a lot of his mobility and his wonderful language and writing skills. And that was a very, very difficult time for them. It was sort of the, in a way, the best of times, worst of times. The public, you know, Julia was this burgeoning celebrity on the cover of Time magazine, won an Emmy, you know, was touring the country, very much of a public person. But behind the scenes, it was a very dark time with Paul having a slow and not entirely successful recovery from this bypass. And so it was very poignant to kind of go back and look at this, and you ask yourself, you know, how did she manage to juggle all of this stuff and maintain her sanity and her balance? And I think the answer really is that she always found her salvation in work. She was a real workhorse. She loved what she did. She loved to cook and to teach and to write. And she, in writing from Julia Child's Kitchen, she drove herself to the point of utter exhaustion. And she said, thank heavens I did. You know, if I hadn't had this difficult cookbook to write, I could have gone cuckoo in those days. So it's a really interesting moment.
My guest today, Alex Prudhomme, who is the author of The French Chef in America, Julia Child's Second Act. It's published by Knopf. He's the grandnephew of the Childs. And I'm glad you brought up that idea of her being a workhorse, because when you watched her on television, as many people did, you saw a very carefree. Now, if you read the books, you saw that there was a lot of work in the recipes and incredible amounts of work. And when you're looking at the mastering, the art of French cooking, but you tell a story, and you alluded to it just a moment ago, the Child's just figuring out how to make French bread at home.
And yeah. And 284 pounds of flour they used.
Yeah, you're talking, you said hours. It was more like months of work.
That's true.
Years. I mean, went to Paris.
They couldn't make it work with American flour in an American oven. They tried all sorts of techniques. And so they were so obsessed that they went to Paris. And Julia took a French bread making lesson with Professor Raymond Calvel, who was the master baker and taught at a school in Paris. And he solved the problem. And they made a little documentary film about it, which was one of a series of documentaries they made about classical French cooking and traditional French food ways. And they inserted those little documentaries into season 2 of The French Chef, which aired in 1970 to 71. You can see them, some of them, on the DVDs that are currently available, and they're really wonderful. But it was through that hard work that she was able to appear carefree on television, because she had spent years honing her technique, reading up on the history of cooking, acquiring the tools and the know-how that she needed, so that when it came to getting a show done in 27 and a half minutes, you know, right on the deadline, she was able to do it in a seemingly haphazard, carefree way that actually wasn't. And this is one of the things that I hope comes through in this new book, is just how hard she worked to make it seem as if it was easy, and thereby putting her audience at ease and kind of holding their hand through a process that some found difficult, but really isn't once you've done it a few times.
Now, once she and Simp Quebec ended their professional collaboration, you see her starting to expand. There was a series with James Beard on American food and history of American food, really. And of course, later in her life, a lot of her television series was about exploration of other cuisines. Was she indeed really curious about how the rest of the world cooked food?
I think that's the perfect adjective for her. She was constitutionally inquisitive and curious. I mean, that's the one word I would apply to her. She was just curious about everything. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that was fun about this new book is I discovered all these anecdotes about Julia that either I had forgotten about or never knew, and I assumed that most other people don't either. But you alluded to something that I stumbled over that I find fascinating, which was a show and a book that she did with James Beard. They did this in 1975, and it was in anticipation of the bicentennial, and it was called 13 Feasts for 13 Colonies. And really, it was a show and book about colonial food and how people, including her own family, had brought recipes and tools from the old world to the original 13 original colonies along the East Coast and applied them to New World ingredients like wild turkey and cranberry and cod and lobster and certain kinds of wheat and so on, and thereby created a kind of distinctly American cuisine. And she just loved this kind of thing. She called herself a history nut, and she just dove into the research. And what I discovered was they had done all this work, and then they shot a pilot or test show for WGBH. And it just didn't go well, unfortunately, because while Julia was a natural on television, she would look right into the camera, and she would smile and wink and make little jokes. James Beard, although he'd had his show and 1946, and he'd been a trained actor, he just wasn't comfortable on television. And I've seen the pilot. It hasn't been made public, but it's remarkable in the difference in their style. And so I think she kind of let it die a quiet death. And there's stories like that I just kept popping up, and which is why I had to write this book, because I thought, wow, how great is that?
Well, earlier in our conversation, you said that you couldn't put the entire resurgence of interest in American cuisine at Julia's feet. But how much do you think Mastering the Art of French Cooking, her French Chef show, and all of her television work since has gone into reviving our interest in food, especially, the way we are today?
I think it was absolutely critical. I say she wasn't the first television chef or solely responsible for America's, food obsession, but she was America's first celebrity TV chef. And she had this ability to blend her deep knowledge and her wonderful technique with this personability, this relatability, and her sort of unbridled enthusiasm to create a new model. And I think she would have very mixed feelings about the result. Today's what I think of like this 24/7 culinary circus. I think she would be dismayed by kind of the glitz and the glam and the she thought of cooking as a civilized art, and she loved it for its camaraderie and its great creativity, not for these kind of faux competitions and soap opera melodramas. On the other hand, today's culinary circus has brought more people to food than ever. More people consider themselves foodies, and they're going out to eat, and they're cooking, and they're talking about it, and I think she would love that. And so I think she would have kind of mixed feelings about it. But at the end of the day, I think the positives would outweigh the negatives.
Alex Prudhomme, thanks very much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you, and bon appetit.
Alex Prudhomme is the author of The French Chef in America, Julia Child's Second Act. It's published by Knopf. He'll be making a BookSmart Tulsa and Oklahoma Center for the Humanities appearance Monday evening at 7 o'clock at the Chapman Hall Lecture Hall on the University of Tulsa campus. A book signing and a film screening will follow the event, and the event is free and open to the public. Information at humanities.utulsa.edu. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.